can make it, do it, makes us all the better, faster, stronger. On 1116 SEN, The Flame with Jason Richardson, featuring the latest from the world of track and field.
And welcome to the Christmas edition of The Flame Show right here on 1116 SEN. It's Melbourne's home of sport and it's Melbourne's home of athletics, and we've got a big show. We'll naturally bring you up with everything that has been happening in the world of track and field. We're also going to talk to a superstar, a former superstar who's now going to be involved with the Fox commentary team over at the London Olympic Games, and I talk of Matt Shervington. We will, of course, be asking a flaming question. You can jump on the Athletics Australia website and Facebook page and on Twitter and answer that question. We'll talk a little bit of Christmas, and also I'll remind you of the great dates we've got coming up where we get to see the best in the world compete right here in Australia. But my special guest in the studio today is a man who has represented Australia at the Olympic Games. He's the two-time national 1500-metre champion. I do talk of Jeff Risley, who joins me. Jeff, good to see you.
Thanks for having me, Jace.
You're looking fit, though you told me off air you're not as fit as you'd like to be.
Yeah, still got a bit of work to do. I sort of competed right through to the end of September, got home just in time for the AFL Grand Final for all our footy mad people. So I sort of had October off and a little bit of surgery, and yeah, I'm sort of just getting back into it. So I'm probably keeping pace with some of the AFL teams, just getting into their hard work.
What surgery did you have?
I had hernia surgery. So I've had left and right done now. For left in 2009 and the right in 2011. So a bit of a strange thing, but yeah, needed to be fixed. So
what gives an 800, 1500 metre runner need to have surgery on a hernia?
I'm not sure. I just had a lot of sort of lower abdominal pain, and you know, I'm not, you can tell by looks me, I'm not lifting big weight.
He's about 75 kilos, ringing wet, listeners.
Yeah, and I might be just running a lot, 140K a week and on and off the track and things like that, just a bit of wear and tear. So best just to fix it up so I can just get a clear run to the Olympics.
And the Olympics is naturally your focus. You got a sample of it in Beijing. And did you like the whole Olympic experience? What was it like, a young guy who's always dreamed of naturally representing Australia?
Yeah, the Olympics were great. Sort of went two ways for me. You know, it was great to be a part of it, but then I got sick in Hong Kong at the training camp and got quarantined in Beijing. So, you know, while I told myself I was ready to go on the start line, I was suffering after two laps, and they ran the Olympic record in my heat, so that didn't really make me look any better. And so it was a bit of a rough time for me, but I came back from that well and didn't lose a race in 2009 in Australia, and then went on to run 3:32. So learnt a lot, and you know, this time looking to, you know, have a better showing for myself.
And it is that international experience, it is the Olympic Games, is the great carrot for young guys like you who are talented sports people growing up at Mazenod College here in Victoria, and probably like all your mates, aspiring to be an AFL player. And you see, you know, the minimum wage for an AFL player will be $300,000 in the year 2016. However, they can never go to the Olympics. They can never represent Australia.
Yeah, I was a bit soft for football, so
an easy decision, wasn't
it? we'd never have made it there. But obviously the Olympic Games is the pinnacle for us, and it's that every 4 years where track and field is relevant on the world stage, although we are getting better. Yeah. And everyone's watching, and it's your opportunity to shine. So looking to take that with two hands.
Right here on 1116 SEM, we've taken live the IAAF track meet at Melbourne, where you've been prominent. You've really been impressive the last few track and field meets at Melbourne.
Yeah, I've since I started when I was just 20, I've won 4 out of 5. So, it's been a good stomping ground for me. But, you know, the thing for me is, you know, I've been a world champion and Olympic gold medalist in March, but I haven't been able to do that in July and August, and that's the real challenge for me. So, you know, I can beat them continually here, but now I've got to sort of try and do that over there, and just try and figure out a way to do that.
Well, it's great that you've identified it, because when we look at, say, the success, and last week on the show we had Catherine Freeman on the show, and she was able to race a lot throughout the Australian domestic season, but probably still train hard through it, yet she was still good enough to be winning everything. and then she got her peak right in Europe. Because we're in a unique situation here in the Southern Hemisphere, a little bit like the South Africans as well, that we have to do the double peak. Whereas the rest of the world, they just concentrate on their summer, which is naturally when all the majors are.
Yeah, it really does make it hard for us because, you know, we compete right through to the end of September in Europe, and then, you know, we've had a long year. We're mentally and physically drained and we want to take a break, but then we've sort of got to get ourselves back up to be racing in February and March. And, you know, this is the time where we got to showcase our sport in Australia, and it's sort of about finding a happy medium to fill those needs, but also looking after our personal needs. Because, you know, I've won in Melbourne and it's great to win in home, but no one cares in the other side of the world. You know, everyone is just thinking about the major championship, and, you know, I haven't been able to quite perform the way I would have liked the last few times. So it's about getting that right.
And do you enjoy that experience? Do you like going to Europe? Because we've seen and we've spoken to Sean Rowe in the program last week, living the dream in many ways. I mean, a lot of kids grow up and all they want to do is, you know, be an international elite athlete. Living the dream, living out of a suitcase, going to track meet after track meet, and plying your trade where you can, if you're successful, make a lot of money. Do you love living that lifestyle?
I'm more of a home person. I like sort of being at home and having my routine. And, you know, while it sounds glamorous, it is a lot of hard work. Mm. And it's, you know, flying from one country, you know, you fly in, you get picked up, you stay at a hotel all day, you don't leave the hotel, you race the next day, you fly out early morning, it's in and out, go back, train. So, you know, it is good, and sometimes I think I take it for granted, but it is a lot of hard work. And, you know, it is difficult for us just being so far away from Europe. You know, I think I did 2 or 3 trips to Europe this year, and I think that took it a little bit out of me that I didn't quite account for. And, yeah, just continually learning and fine-tuning, you know, because athletics is one of those sports you've got to be 110%, otherwise you just get exposed.
Exactly. There's no hiding in track and field. Your PB's 800 metres at Rieti in Italy, 144.6, and then, of course, your 1,500 metres in 332.9. You still feel in your heart of hearts, even though you're a two-time national champ and, you know, you're only a young man, you've still got a lot faster times to achieve.
Yeah, I definitely think so. Like, it's great to run fast, but it's, you know, it's more important to compete at the major championships. And I think this year, like, I was in great shape. I didn't miss a day off. You know, I was really ready to go, but probably just trained too hard and tried to force it too much. And yeah, I definitely think I've got a lot more left there, but it's just more about just relaxing and not thinking about it too much and train and then get away from it, you know what I mean? Whereas I was just like going crazy. I was a bit of a monk. I was obsessed by it. And just train myself into the ground and probably didn't quite get the results that I probably deserved and were sort of reflected the sort of shape I was in. So
just trying to get that balance right is the key to any international athlete. Tell us about your setup. No doubt you get great support from Athletics Australia and the Australian Sports Commission. Nike supports you as well. You got other supporters and your coach. Tell us about the whole setup for Team Risley.
Yeah, well, 2007, I went to my first World Championships, and I woke up one morning to find this man just sitting in my room, like in the living room.
Oh,
and
it was
Gary Moritas had been sent over to fix up Buster. And, you know, Gary's a really good guy, easy to talk to. And, you know, we got talking, and I took one thing away from that, and he says, you've got to set up Team Risley and a good team around me. And, you know, I'm working with Nick Bordeaux, you know, one of the best coaches in the world. And I was able to meet Andrew Lambert, my physio, through the VIS, who's now just full-time at the Hawthorn Footy Club. And then I met Andrew Russell, who's a fitness guy there.
Fantastic.
And he's taken on my strength and conditioning. And then I've got Gary Moritas, who's been out of action a little bit lately with his hand, but he's taken on more of a mentor role. So, you know, I've got a great facility out at the Hawthorn Footy Club, and Ultra G's, and these footy clubs have got the best facilities in Australia. So yeah, I've been pretty lucky. I took on what Gary told me, and I've set up, you know, great a great supportive network around myself. And, you know, I live out in southeastern suburbs near Listerfield Lake and Fernie Creek. So in terms of running, I've got everything sort of covered, all those one percenters. So, yeah, I'm doing everything I possibly can.
That's good. It's a good setup that you've got. Now, Chris, this is our Christmas show. So ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas to you. 150 plus athletes will be on Boxing Day. Be going straight up to Falls Creek to do altitude training. I think there's a junior camp. Tim O'Shaughnessy, of course, the distance coordinator, will take a group up there with the great Monners. Have you ever done the altitude program up there?
I've never done it over the Boxing Day New Year period. I'm a bit of a beach guy, so I head down to Inverloch and do a bit of sea level training.
That's good news. I'm trying to bring Okanui's back, so just give him a run.
Yeah, so I sort of spend New Year's down there with my family, and I'll head up there on the 4th and join the masses. But the numbers start to decline by then, so I can get a bit more room on the tracks. And I've heard it gets pretty chaotic, 150 guys running out and back on tyre tracks on an aqueduct. So, yeah, I don't think I'm exactly missing much, but it is great for everyone to get together and the camaraderie that, you know, is the distance community, and everyone's up there. But gee, I've been up there and get belted by, you know, under 18 kids, and I'm thinking, you know, what's going on? What am I in that bad a shape? And then I come out and run 3:35. So if there are kids up there just who are listening into the program, just train like you would at home. Don't be racing, and get what you need out of it. Otherwise, if you go too hard, you'll dig a hole for yourself. So
I think that's great advice. Hey, we've got some latest news in track and field. I'll bring you up to speed there and love your comments here. Great news for all fans of Australian athletics, and that American 400-meter runner, Greg Nixon, who won a relay gold in Daegu at the World Championships, will be running in Perth on Feb 11 and in Sydney on Feb 18. So that's a great opportunity for Johnny Steph, and Sean Rowe was in the studio with us last week. And also, of course, this young talent, Steve Solomon, who looks to have an amazing future ahead of him. They've all got someone to really go toe-to-toe with Greg Nixon. So that's good news. Disappointing report coming out of Europe, though. French triple jumper Teddy Tamgo, who is a huge star, has received a 12-month ban. Six of it is suspended after being involved in a fight with a female athlete at a training camp in October. The world indoor champ and record holder will be unable to compete in the world indoors in March, but he'll be available for the London 2012 Olympics. That is a massive story, because you've seen him overseas. He's a serious star.
Yeah, he is, and I think he actually broke his ankle triple jumping. That is the amount of force that goes through your body when you're triple jumping.
I think it's 12 times your body weight. It's ridiculous.
The French, they must just be all fighters, because I was in the race in Monaco where the two French athletes were punching on after the race in front of Prince Albert. I don't think they received a 12-month ban, but...
This guy's been punching on with a poor woman, so, we've got to draw the line there. So that's a terrible story, Teddy Tamgo there with a 12-month ban, but six of it is suspended. Other news, Sebastian Coe and Sergei Bubka, of course, two of the best athletes we've ever seen, will be elevated up to being chairman of a couple of the key portfolios in amongst the IAAF Commission. So that's good news there. The more we keep our superstars of the sport involved at the top level is great to see. And also, the IAAF have announced that as of next year, they will introduce a Hall of Fame to mark its 100th birthday. It's hard to believe the IAAF doesn't have a Hall of Fame. It is remarkable.
Kathy Freeman will just have to walk straight into that, won't she?
Well, this is IAAF. I'm thinking that...
47 races in a row,
Olympic gold medalist. You make a good point, but... I mean, Sergei Bubka probably gets elevated straight away. Carl Lewis, Jesse Owens. I mean, we're talking that sort of upper pantheon of greatness will be elevated straight into the Hall of Fame. But I'll give the IAAF a call and give your nominations as well. Hey, also great news for all the athletics fans that Athletics Australia have announced that the Nine Network, Fox Sports and the Telstra Big Pond Network will broadcast the 2012 Australian Athletics Tour. So, ATS fans get to see you compete in all the major events, which is fantastic.
Yeah, it's a great initiative from Athletics Australia. It's something we sort of lacked in the past. Hopefully sort of make that transition towards live athletics. That'd be great.
Well, we'll find out when you'll get to see Jeff Risley after the break, and also we'll chat to the great Matt Shervington at one stage throughout the late 90s. He was nearly the fastest man in the world, and he was definitely the fastest white man in the world. Stick with us here on The Flame.
The Flame on 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport. On 1116 SEN, The Flame with Jason Richardson, featuring the latest from the world of track and field.
Away, Bolden got out brilliantly, so did Shervington. Frederick's going quickly with Thompson, it's Bolden in front. Thompson comes at him with Frederick's, then Shervington, but it's Addo Bolden first, and he's run 9.88, excuse me, Shervington's run 4.
It's a new games record. Goodbye, Linford Christie. Hello, Atto. Look at that.
And there's great moments and great memories of a little snapshot in the outstanding career of one of the best sprinters we've ever produced in this country in Matt Shervington, who's been kind enough to join us on the line on our Christmas special here on The Flame. Shervo, great to chat to you. Great to go down memory lane with some memories of your outstanding career, which, believe it or not, feels like a long time ago now.
Yeah, thanks, Richo. Jeff, how you doing, mate? Yeah, look, you know, it's funny. In the blink of an eye, you can turn around and a decade's gone by, and I think that was about 14 years ago now at the 98 Commonwealth Games, so it's been a long time behind me, but the memory's still pretty fresh, and it's nice to know that still that's the fastest ever Commonwealth Games 100 metres, and it was nice to be involved in, and you know, the likes of Addo Bolden, Frankie Fredericks, Obadeli Thompson, you know, those names will live on forever as some of the best sprinters ever in track and field. And now there's this new crop of amazing sprinters coming through with Usain Bolt and Johan Blake and Asafa Powell. They all seem to be Jamaican these days.
It is extraordinary. And you mentioned some of the all-time great names of track and field in Addo Bolden and Frankie Fredericks. You've seen him up close from a commentating point of view and also probably on the track. How good is Usain Bolt?
Look, I think the biggest difference with Usain is, and you look at all the data that he's producing, and he's running the fastest 10-metre times of any sprinter ever. I think the second fastest, when you break it down, was Maurice Greene, running sort of a 10-metre segment at their top speed at about 0.81 of a second. So it's insanely fast. I think the key thing with Usain is his height. He's 6'4". But his ability to cover the ground is no different to Maurice Greene, who was sort of 5'9", 5'10". So really, every step that he takes, and I think on average it's about 3 metres a step, the ground that he's covering. So it's just a much bigger amount of ground that he's covering, but he's still got the same amount of speed. He's still fantastic out of the blocks. He can generate power as well, which I think for a big man is quite the significant difference with Usain. You know, so many people said he's only going to be a 200-metre runner when he was a junior. He may go to the 400 metres, but I think the key is he's worked on his start and his reaction and his ability to get out of the blocks, and that's really what's sort of made him the superpower that he is, because he's always going to have the top speed on top of everyone else.
Matt, what do you think of Johan Blake? I watched him in the World Championships, and I came away with the feeling that if Bolt had not have false started and been disqualified, that the race was not a certain, he was not a certainty to win that race. And I think Usain's going to have to go back to the work ethics that he had in 2008 when he was coming out and he was fresh and
yeah, good call.
just improving. I think he's gone away from that hard work and a bit more lifestyle. And Johan Blake, he could just take him out in London.
Yeah, I think you're right, Jeff, absolutely. And we saw it in his 200 metres a couple of weeks later, running 19.26.
And he missed the start.
Time ever. And he missed the start. And I think you're absolutely right. The reason Usain Bolt false started in that race was because he knew Johan Blake was a chance to beat him. Absolutely. You bang on there. And I think he trains with him every day. He's one of his training partners for a long time. He knows the quality of an athlete that he is. And Usain would have gone into that race thinking, if I don't get this start, at the end of the race, it's going to be too close to call. So I've got to get out of these blocks really quickly. That puts so much pressure on him, pressure that he hasn't felt before since running the 100 metres. He came into the 2008 Beijing Games not having run the 100 metres before. There was no expectation. He broke the world record and won the event. World Championships the next year. He broke the world record again. No one put pressure on him until the next World Championships, of course, this year it was. Yeah. And he then crumbled under that pressure. And I think it's the type of pressure that you see Asafa Powell put himself under in a major championship and not being able to come through with. He was a former world record holder, couldn't come through with a major championship win. Look, what's going to happen in London? I think you're right again. I think Usain's got to go back to a little bit more of what got him to the top shape that he was in 08 and 09. Hopefully a run of injuries after that won't be around leading into 2012. He absolutely has the ability to beat Johan Blake and beat him hands down, running 9.58. I don't think Johan Blake can run those sort of times. I was surprised over the 200 Johan Blake ran what he did, but Usain, I think, has so much more potential. His reaction time's still slower than most out of the blocks. He also can fulfil, I think, what he's capable of in terms of ground coverage in each split, and I think he can go 0.80 and maybe find a 9.55 or something like that in the future. So I think anyone's going to be hard to beat that.
Mate, it's great to hear you talk so passionately about the great sport of track and field. We'll get to watch you a lot throughout the London Olympics on Fox Sports. That'll be exciting, mate. We could sit there and have a chat to you, and hopefully this Flame program, one day when you're in Melbourne, you can come in and co-host it with me. It'd be fantastic to chat more about your great career. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Richard. Thanks, Jeff. Nice one. I've enjoyed being on.
There is Matt Shervington on Christmas Day talking all things sprinting. And that'll be our flaming question of the day. What time did Matt Shervington run in that famous 1998 Commonwealth Game final? He mentioned some of the all-time greats. It was won by Addo Bolden. What time did he run? Jump on the Athletics Australia website, check out their Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and don't forget to download. You can jump on iTunes and download a podcast of this program, The Flame, and an Australian Flame T-shirt will be the competition winner for that one. What time did Shervo run? Also, talking about the London Olympic Games, Julian Ruck threw 65.73 in the Vic Throwers meet at Geelong last weekend. Puts him second on the Australian all-time list, gives him an Olympic qualifier, so he'll be looking to be one of the two throwers in London next year. Just as a little reminder, also, so much to look forward to in the world of track and field here in Australia. Adelaide, January 28, Perth, Feb 11, Sydney, Feb 18, March 2-3 will be Melbourne and also the Olympic qualifier. Jeff, you've been an outstanding co-host. You've been nearly good. I'm thinking of resting you because you might take over my job. When do we get to see you compete at one of the big majors?
Probably Adelaide. I've still got a bit of training to get done and a bit of fitness to gain. So, yeah, we'll know a lot more in the next few weeks once I come back from False Creek.
So you're straight into a 15 or you do an 8 first up?
Probably a 15 just to see where I'm at and see what I need to do to be ready come March 3rd.
Well, good luck, mate. You're part of the Flame family now, so we'll be barracking hard for you. Good luck, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and let's hope 2012 is a ripper for Jeff Risley.
Thanks, guys.
And there is Jeff Risley, my co-host today here on The Flame Show. Thanks to all our guests. Merry Christmas from everyone in the Athletics fraternity. Hope you have a great day.
The Flame on 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport.